equals burn. The propaganda's a win, stress feeding on my tension. My countrymen, they love their fiction. Where's Parnell? This bay with good intentions.
Welcome to 1-200, the politics and media podcast. We're back for current events, where it's all happening here in Aotearoa. Things get worse, but you know, there's lots of positives there as well, I think, somewhere. And luckily, I have the most optimistic other co-hosts here to even me out. Simone, how are you doing?
Hi, hello. I'm doing well. I'm here in sunny mystery place, and there. I mean, there's a noodle house nearby. What can I say? There are two, in fact. So I'm doing okay. The country is not, and I'm not. I don't mean like the nation state. I don't give a flying fuck about the nation state. I mean like the people who actually live here and the land and the creatures. So yeah.
We're also joined by 1-200's winner 3 years in a row of most optimistic co-host, Philip. How are you doing?
You have to hand it to him.
Ni hao, welcome back, everybody. Yeah, I'm sure you've all been enjoying the headlines. I can't wait to get into it and figure out who the winners and losers have been.
Fuck me.
And what your ups and downs of the week have been.
I just, I'm going to throw
up. The important thing is that we ask Paddy Gower.
Yeah, exactly. We need the greatest minds of our generation in the media, really breaking down these complex budgeting documents into little bite-sized chunks and ideally comparing them to Shortland Street or whatever the fuck people are watching on TV these days.
God, I wish they were doing something so useful. But, you know, we're a media podcast as well for a reason, and that's because a lot of what we'd end up doing is trying to analyze and critique the way that New Zealand's media report on politics. And this week was pretty fucking horrific for that. Paddy Gower appealed to trickle-down economics and his 2-minute budget breakdown. And you're like, I wish he'd compared it to Shortland Street instead.
I may have been optimistic, yeah. It's, if anything, a more dated and embarrassing reference to be, and you know, in the year of our Lord 2025, referencing trickle-down economics without talking about pissing. Like, that's just so embarrassing.
Were you putting your hand up for a question, or were you covering your face from the sun, Simone?
Oh, I was just coughing.
Oh, okay.
Oh, you mean before? No, I was I was messing with the lighting. I was just trying to see if I should flag it off and buy like some more lighting stuff for my webcam for 1-200.
Simone's trying to make herself as incredibly beautiful and shining as possible in a purely...
People who don't know this, I actually use... I don't own a webcam, so I use a DSLR to do this, and I have currently a reflector up. I sometimes use some diffusion. And yeah, anyway...
This is one in an increasing series of every few episodes when Simone gets interested in the lighting. Remember,
I'm always interested in the lighting. Sometimes I just give up on it being bad. That's the only thing. The other thing is, if you want to see what this looks like, watch our live streams. We have them coming up every time.
They usually happen at night so far, so you don't get as much natural lighting. But maybe we can get your whole rig by the time get around to the New Zealand
control
election.
It, and I do.
Fantastic. So after that, is this the kind of episode it's going to be? Let's find out. Everything's cut. And it's very clearly just to do a wealth transfer. Like, really, like, they're basically just saying, hey, we're taking money out off poor people and parents and women. And we're giving it to...
Renters.
And we're giving it to our mates. And they spent, like, what, a whole week last week saying how the pay equity changes were nothing to do with the budget. And then on budget day, they're like, yeah, they were actually. They're how we're funding a whole bunch of the budget. And just, it's so brazen at this point. And I don't know, I do know, but I, you know, rhetorically, I don't know why media aren't just hounding them now, because this is like happening every week. And this, I think this is, I'd say like one of the... I mean, it's the second or third, like, main policy or action that the government has just outright lied about, only to turn around and go, you know, the big one being before the election with the 2023 campaign, where they just outright lied about their tax numbers. And the entire media apparatus was like, oh, they're doing so well. Look, how is Labor going to beat this? They're eating Labor's lunch. Wake up from the election. Oh, wait a second. Craig Rennie found the numbers. Why did the electorate even listen to us? Those idiots, for falling for Nationals tricks. And then with the budget, this week, it was like, oh, we're not pushing this huge, horrible bill that's stripping future money and pay equity claims off, what nurses, teachers, other public service people, predominantly women-led industries. We're not giving that or using that for any reason to do with the budget. That's just something that we wanted to do, just by chance. And we can't send it to select committee. We can't do anything like that with it. But trust us. Oh, like 3 days later. Oh yeah, that's actually why we did it. And I haven't really seen. It's been mentioned. I guess that's good, but I haven't seen anyone just take them to task for it, even let alone castigate them for it. As you've said, Philip, a lot of it's just winners and losers.
Yeah, that's the easiest way to run these conversations. And like, as you referenced the idea from the brain trust. I said drain trust. The brain trust in Christopher Luxon's office to say that the attack on pay equity and working women and low income people and carers wasn't about balancing the budget. And in our episode with Stephanie, she said, "Well, you see how that's worse, right? Like doing this ideologically." To not save money is a worse thing to do than to do it because we quote unquote can't afford it. And yet, no sign of that in the establishment media. But yeah, I mean, the headlines are bad. Like, to do a don't tell me what you value, show me your budget, and I'll tell you what you value, as noted philosopher of our time, Joe Biden, said. Yeah, it's the low operating allowance, right? That's a real killer. Last budget and this budget, and definitely next budget as well, based on everything they've said. And I think there's a bit of a, I guess, kind of buzzword fight that's gone around about whether it's quote unquote austerity budget or not. And I sort of think like that's besides the point. Like, one budget doesn't make austerity, it's the outcomes that are tied to the economic conditions that you're in which that budget is created, right? So, like, yes, it's the government that creates the bad times in those certain conditions, and there's ways they can avoid it. But in different conditions, this might not be an austerity budget. But the outcome of the last budget plus this budget, I think, hits austerity territory. And like Bernard Hickey's talking about a double dip recession probably later this year, and years before we get to real wage growth and increasing productivity and stuff on established kind of trends. Not great, folks, even, by pretty mainstream kind of economic markers. Really, like, I guess the underlying kind of thread is that this government's relying on households and businesses to do the borrowing and the work and the spending instead of picking up the shovels and doing it themselves. Because they're neoliberals and that's what they value. But the housing market's at a standstill, and that's the only button we're used to hitting from residential spending. So, household spending, I should say. So, like, they don't have a plan to get out past that other than wait for the international kind of tides to turn. Hopefully, Trump wakes up tomorrow and makes a different decision about tariffs. Hopefully, we can export twice as much milk powder to China. I don't see how that could possibly go wrong. We keep searching for gas in fields where we've been searching for gas for decades and not found any worth pulling out. And somehow we do find some that's worth pulling out, make another 200 million from that. But yeah, really just, the incentives in this economy are to buy residential housing, because why the hell would you take a chance starting a business and working hard and creating something new when you can buy an asset that Labour and National agree should increase in value faster than inflation and get sold with no capital gains tax? Like,
And get 20% write-off on it on top of that under the new budget.
well, yeah, different thing, not residential property.
Well, it depends what you're buying it for.
Well, that's why I said residential. But yeah, look, we can get into the specifics a little bit. But I think the interesting, like, the through lines is that kind of thing, like passing off the responsibility onto households and businesses, the through line of means testing, like bringing back just means test every single thing. Like, one of the very few tiny good things that Jacinda's government did was pull back a little bit when they introduced new initiatives. Not everything had to be means tested quite to death, only almost to death. So, KiwiSaver government contributions, Best Start means tested, benefits for 18, 19-year-olds, parents are means tested. Just everything has to be means tested right now. Everyone needs to fill in 10 forms and, Lord forbid if you spell something wrong. And yeah, I just think the combined effort is what we need to be talking about, as opposed to like these single cuts. Like it's such a temptation, I think, in day-to-day kind of media cycles to talk about this budget has done X. Well, I mean, not really. Like it's been inserted into a certain set of political and economic conditions, and it wouldn't have done X if we weren't in a situation Y. And I think you need to kind of run those two things together.
Yeah, on the means testing part as well. You know, just the other yesterday, I think as well, Luxon was saying, "Yep, super age is on the table as well for the next election." You know, they're trying to start these arguments. They're trying to start these fights. They're trying to say, "Oh, look, we're means testing young people on the benefits." So you never know. Let's put this up. Maybe means testing is coming for super, because that would be a big air quotes money saver.
This country can't afford it, I say for my second super yacht. Like,
Second.
it's so transparent, and I don't understand why this is something which is taken seriously by media. Also, this is such a severe violation of the idea that the idea that your children should have a better life than you had, the idea that you get to retire at 65, but your children's children might be at 70 or never, actually, because of the way that all of employment is becoming. It's just, surely this is something that even older voters who tend to vote national would be repulsed by. But it's difficult because I don't think people necessarily have a grasp on what the actual policies of the parties are or have a memory for that sort of thing. And this is kind of a severe difficulty, is that this is a terrible budget, yes, but this is not a budget just before an election, right? Which is really the only thing that matters. And even then, there's enough time for people to just lie. And there's something about the way that it's reported. And I don't even necessarily want to talk about the budget reporting, but reporting about something like national in general, where you want to talk about anything except for what they will do and what you know they're lying about because of past experience and having not been born yesterday, right? And that's never done. It's never done. So you always have these situations where, I mean, like you were talking about this idea of the fiscal hole, right? Like this is a projection that National pulls out every single election. Is like, oh, the Greens have like, you know, this big hole in their finances. They don't know what they're doing and stuff. And then if anybody bothers to actually look at what National proposes, it makes no sense. It's complete nonsense. Yeah. This happened in the UK as well when Corbyn was the leader of the Labour Party. They had a fully costed manifesto. And the questions were still the same frame from reporters. Although the UK court press is a little different because every reporter is just an aristocrat's third child, you know, because it used to be the priest, like the heir, the spare, and then the other one can go off and join the Catholic Church. And like now it's like, you know, the fuck ups get to become reporters. Like the idiot of the family becomes the reporter, you know, if your last name is a hyphenate in England, right? So what happens really was they had this fully costed manifesto and the frames didn't change. The questions were always, how are you going to pay for this? And I was like, well, we've got a document. It shows us we had economists do this. And they're like, how are you going to pay for it? And just pretend like that wasn't being answered. The Conservatives didn't have to cost a single thing. Didn't matter because they're the natural leaders of government. National is treated the same way here. It is. They can just say something like, I don't know, strong and stable, or like we're like moving forward strongly, or whatever it is. Or Luxon can pull out some weird CEO speak that he heard at a retreat or at Davos or something like that, or at Little St. James.
We're gonna
And
jack off
then,
the economy.
yeah, exactly. We're gonna jack off the rock star economy. We're gonna be groupies for the rock star economy. We're gonna be underage girls for the rock star economy. What is going on? How can it be that reporters just don't? I mean, we know why, right? We understand why, but it's kind of an absurdity to think that there is any sort of reasonable discourse that can come about from this. There's not only an economic illiteracy among reporters, and no effort to assist people who are listening to it, right? The audience, I suppose you might want to say, although an audience in political reporting is participatory, but it's also the. Sometimes, actually, a lot of the time, the economists that talk about it. And there's something really depressing about that. The idea is obfuscatory. We don't use terms which actually make sense, right? The notion of a job creator, for example, this kind of mythical fiction which doesn't map to anything. All value from something comes from the actual the labor that's applied to it, and the transformation of it. It's workers that make jobs for the CEOs. It doesn't happen the other way around. The economy relies on every single essential worker. We just had a pandemic where it was proven, right? We just had a pandemic where we saw who could have a job over Zoom or just take time off and who couldn't. And guess who? Well, the job creators could take time off, because they don't matter, because everybody else runs it. So seeing, I have to give major credit, I think, to two people, and I'm sure you'll have more people that I think have been quite enlightening about this budget. And the first to me is an account called Musical Chairs, which is of unknown provenance on Twitter, which primarily focuses or has a tendency to focus on unemployment. But I think that that is a great indicator because unemployment shows you like what the Reserve Army of Labor is. It shows you what who's going to be punished. It shows you what the plans are for incarceration. For the country, and also, the general despair among people in any nation. The other is that, I mean, you've talked about Craig Rennie, who's goes in for every single budget that comes out and does an analysis of it. And this sort of thing takes time, but I think that he's done a really good job of breaking it down so far, at least. But these are sobering figures. I mean, I look at what was being reported by this account, Musical Chairs, like youth unemployment. Going to be up to 25%. Job seeker forecast just at toward January 2026, an increase of 21,000 people, about 400,000 people in total in this country being underemployed, which means either they don't have a job or they don't have really enough hours to do more than scrape by, or they are really struggling or they're going into debt and they just need that work. They're underemployed. And we are in a recession. This whole thing is tanking. There's something really disturbing about that. Craig Rennie's pointed out some really big figures, I think, which is the kind of elephant in the room is that the budget takes this $12.8 billion from these pay equity industries, largely female dominated, but other genders as well work in these from these workforces, and then it's just giving it away to the government's priority, including their $13 billion tax giveaway to landlords. It is paying for that, and there's an increase in basically everything evil. There's an increase in defense spending that we're going to be
A
seeing.
huge increase.
Corrections is going to see a huge increase. That they anticipate possibly, and this is just at the upper end, but doubling prison numbers within a decade.
You got to fill that
Astonishing
mega
stuff,
prison
right?
somehow, eh?
Exactly. Well,
they're trying to build a prison for you and me to live in.
Roughly doubling defense and corrections. Like that's not a tweak. And like the reason that it's getting phrased as a tweak in the gallery journalist sphere, like, man, the number of times that I've heard the phrase nips and tucks in this budget to imply that there have been minor changes, like drink every time someone says nips and tucks and you won't make it past budget day. But it's because they live in this bubble where they agree, right? They do think there should be massive increases to defense spending. And by they, I mean gallery journalists, I mean the majority of the Labour Party, I mean the majority of public, like senior public servants. And that's the decision makers, right? They all sit down and talk about how, oh, we really need a minimum of 2% GDP on our defence, and we
NATO
need to,
numbers, NATO, like outright NATO numbers, right?
yeah,
Like.
and means test every single thing we give these povos out of Wellington. And there's a small club, and you're not in it. I think we need a bit of kind of populist anti-technocrat energy around the budget, and I haven't seen that anywhere, right? Like I disagree with them about a lot. Insert your don't cancel me here, but like enjoyed Bernard Hickey's podcast about the budget, his Hoon podcast about the budget afterwards. I thought it was like the most informative single kind of hour I've heard on it. He was great, and he had Craig Rennie on and a few other people, but he was really good at cutting through the kind of specifics and listing them, and also saying, but there's underlying structural stuff that last government didn't touch, the government before it didn't touch, government before it didn't touch, but this government is actively making worse, is piling wood on the burning trash heap of what we used to be a country slash economy. And now we're a housing market with bits tacked on, as he says every day. And also shout out to Ed Miller at Labour Cartel. He's
Friend of the
started
cast.
some graphs which are really good and showing just like the differentiation, which is just embarrassing. I mean, the more you think about this actual scale of our political imagination in this country when it comes to macro fiscal stuff, the more kind of bleak my at least kind of expectations for the future get in electoral politics. So he posted a graph that he whacked up yesterday, and he said apparently at an 8.3% increase in net core crown debt by 2029 is the difference between a responsible budget to secure our future and Marxism, the absolute state of this country's political discourse. And then he's graphed the projected increases in net core crown debt over the next 4 years between the Greens' alternative budget, where it gets up to 53.8%, and Nationals' budget that they've released, which is 45.5%. And Nicola Willis calls Nationals' track a responsible budget to secure New Zealand's future, and the Coalition call the Green budget Marxist and left-wing Trumpism. 8% difference between those two. I mean, this is the difference we're talking about, right? There isn't a radical imagination on the kind of electoral scale for what a budget could look like that I've seen. I'm still trying to get Chloe on to interview her. You can decide if you leave that in or not. But I'm looking forward to find out what an alternative country could look like. But I don't know about the scale of the problem, but to you, I think 8% is kind of piss poor. We're what, $200 billion behind on infrastructure investment? Add to that climate change resilience, add to that health and education that's been underfunded for minimum 30 years, including buildings, including staff, including retention. We've got migrants coming in to replace people who've left with all the skills that we've spent decades training them with. We need some form of incentive to keep people to stay in the actual country. We need to clean up all the pollution that's gone into our rivers, that's gone into our natural habitats in the last few years. Like, how much do you people think this is going to cost? I don't get it. Like, these are liabilities that aren't on the books, right?
Hey, I can do this though, mate. Hey, I can do this.
And then, I mean, we're not talking about pay equity.
Well, that's
That I
what
think would be
community
part of
work
a
is for.
functioning.
We're putting the kids into the justice system so they can clean up what the farmers do.
Oh, good. Yeah, that'll do it.
That'll fix it.
One prisoner per farm.
A prisoner in every pot.
Oh, God. I'm glad there's no disturbing historical parallels to that, or I'd be really unhappy. And then, yeah, just bringing public health up to scratch. We need, well, at least five more hospitals. That's a minimum of probably $20 billion over the next few years in construction. Rail between the cities, if we want to be an adult country, that's another few $1 billion. Like, none of these things are on the books, right? So you can crow about red and black as much as you want, but like, none of us are betting on the future. Ooh, put them in parliament. That's a good line. Right? Like, climate readiness, that's billions more. Like, where are the defenses for the next once in a 100-year flood that'll come in 2 years? Biodiversity, we've cancelled Predator Free 2025, even though it only cost a few million and it was on track to work.
So, yeah, like some of this stuff is just nasty, right?
Energy resilience, manufacturing, like, we've dumped all of our efficient manufacturing sectors. We need to rebuild some of that, especially with this like backlash against globalization. Like, what are the good jobs going to be? Not everyone can work in the tech sector. Research and development, like, we need to bring some of that in-house. This is like, minimum hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars over the next decade, and there's no plan for any of this shit from National. And fingers crossed, but I don't see any of it from Labour or the Greens either.
The
Sorry,
elephant in
that's
the
a
room,
rant.
really, is that the only way to really achieve this is China. Like the only way, realistically, if you were to have a clear-eyed, real politic view on this, it would be China. You know what the new bloc is. You know who's giving out loans. You know who's giving out money. You know who's big. The only real reason, I think, other than fear of optics or whatever, is plain and simple. It's one, it's racism. Two, It's arrogance. There's a belief that this country is like a mini empire. And in some ways it is, but we aren't the United Kingdom in the 19th century. We're not the United States in the 20th century. We've been allowed to believe that because we acted as a little finger puppet on the end of one of the tentacles of each of these empires in each century. But there's, I think, a real sense that New Zealanders have deluded themselves into believing that this is any more than just a sea of islands among a vast Pacific. This is a country which, given its underinvestment, is totally unable to undo all of that damage. And we can't put monetary amounts on it. I think you bring up something really beautifully important, Philip, which is that, and this is something that what I think is every New Zealander who was born in the last 40 years understanding is, because we do get education in Te Ao Māori to an extent, is that you don't just live as an isolated economic subject. What we call, quote unquote, the environment is inseparable from political economy, and it undergirds and feeds into political. It is the basis of all political economy, human people and the environment, right, which are inextricably linked. You can't separate these things out from each other. I mean, there's a reason we say like nor wai koe, right? Like wai is water as well. You know, there's a reason why whakapapa works this way. There's a reason why pepaha works a certain way. There's a reason why we understand these genealogies this way and these connections and interconnections between everything. Because you can't have abstract numbers on a spreadsheet and say, okay, well, you know, perhaps if we just increase the crown debt for so many years that this is going to be good and this is going to be okay. There's been incalculable damage done to the ecology of these islands and to the ocean around it. And I think it's disturbing that there is a total lack of understanding from that among people who are supposed to be educators and communicators about this sort of thing. One thing that you picked up on that is just a side point that I want to note is, you know, you were talking about some specifics of increases in funding, decreases in funding, and shortfalls. And Scobin has made a big song and dance, although I think it hasn't really been picked up much outside of the kind of intralegal community reporting and media, which is that there's supposed to be an increase of funding for the courts, for justice generally, for the Ministry of Justice. And one of the much vaunted things they're doing is increasing the number of high court judges, I believe it is in this country, from 55 to 57 statutorily total, which apparently hasn't changed in 20 years. I don't know if you know this, but when I was a kid, which was more than 20 years ago, but not that much more, there were 3 million people in this country. There are now over 5 million people in this country. Like, we haven't doubled, but 55 to 57 ain't it. They're also not giving money for the refurbishment of a number of places. I used to practice at the Hamilton courts, including the Hamilton District Court. And there just aren't enough courtrooms, and they won't build more, and they won't refurbish the existing ones. This is all dying out. The Coroner's Court in Hamilton doesn't have courtrooms. They have to borrow and steal other people's rooms to be able to undertake it. There's a game of musical chairs going on with the tribunals, with the civil courts. This is nonsense, right? The whole point is really to restrict this kind of access to justice. And how are they saying they're going to make it more efficient? How are they saying that this funding is going to better justice in this country? Well, the reason is like, well, one, adding a couple of judges, very small thing. But, you know, perhaps this will have some ameliorating effect, even though they don't have anywhere to sit. The other thing that they're doing is removing people's access to justice. They say they're, quote unquote, making the system more efficient, which they haven't given the details on, but it's a huge red flag. Because what that means is fewer people are going to be able to seek relief. They're undertaking, quote unquote, a review of legal aid funding. I don't know if you know this, legal aid. It's not only worse in this country, you not only have to pay it back, which you didn't used to have to do, but it's the access to this is diminishing. Lawyers can't practice purely doing legal aid work anymore, or even with a large mix of legal aid work anymore, because it doesn't pay enough and a lot has to be written off. And there are a whole host of problems with the bureaucracy of it. They are looking to essentially, in an industry which is as much as I hate to call the legal profession an industry, which is dying. Young people are going overseas. Guess what? If you don't have young lawyers, they're not going to become intermediate lawyers. Then there's nobody to become senior lawyers. This is already becoming a problem. And the senior and intermediate lawyers are the ones who become the judges and feed into this. Even though we don't have enough judges for this country, they are struggling to find candidates in some cases for these because people just are leaving. And if people don't have access to justice because we have a Byzantine system where we say ignorance of the law is no excuse, and yet you have to have a professional person that you pay hundreds of dollars an hour to understand it, then guess what? You don't have access to justice. You can be screwed over by rich people. That is how this is supposed to work. That is only in the civil jurisdiction. I will very briefly just say something about the criminal jurisdiction, which is that the way that they are proposing to reduce the number of cases is by getting rid of short prison sentences, which just means the old school. We're on a slide towards what they used to do, where you steal a loaf of bread, hand chopped off. You steal a loaf of bread, you get shipped off to Australia. You get put in a hulk on the Thames. A big
I mean,
ship.
getting shipped off to Australia doesn't sound so bad at
Yeah,
this.
hang on a second. We're going to make
They're
more money, Simone? Brilliant.
doing
Wait, they've got
it.
better rights
They're
over there
doing it
too
all,
for
you know.
workers.
The move to Australia by any means necessary budget.
This used to be a punishment of the 19th century. I'm sorry, kids. I don't know if you understand this, but it used to be. But this is the whole way that they are doing it, right? It's an increase in the prison numbers. It is getting rid of short sentences. It is stopping the churn and the revolving door, not by getting people off the pathway toward the revolving door or the prison pipeline, but just by making them stick in it and never come off it. This is a real problem.
And more money for boot camps,
More
as
money for boot
and
camps,
more money
as
for
we've seen
private
this example.
schools. They're giving money to private schools even if private schools don't want it now. Like, it's just absurd shit.
Oh,
Is
well, they're cutting early childhood education.
Just wild, eh? I
And
just
look,
want to. Sorry.
quickly, just I wanted to quickly say, for anyone who's confused about, as Simone just said, they're cutting early childhood education. That is accurate, but it different headlines will say different things, right? Different people factor in different things when they say cut versus this is the big debate that Robertson and who was it, Stephen Joyce years ago had about what's a cut. We've funded X more than any government in history. Every government will say that because inflation's gone
Possible.
up and population's gone up. But on a per person score, I think it's still pretty convincing to say that there's also been cuts to education as a whole and health as a whole. Because the population's gone up. And even though they've increased those things above inflation, they haven't increased them above per person payment. If you have five people in your household, let's imagine the country is a household. If you have five people in your household and you used to make $100 a year, each person had, $20 to spend. Now you have six people in your household and you're making $110 a year. You do the math. That's, inflation isn't the only thing that affects the pressure on these services, as Simone was saying, 57 judges to be divided amongst 5 million people is not as good as 55 judges divided amongst 3 million people. And the desperation is the same in health and it's the same in education. As PMAX says every episode, that we can't, keep them away with a stick. We need more teachers. Why would you be a teacher in this country? The payment's the pay's terrible. The conditions are awful. You're worked way above and beyond your capacity to deal with bullshit. You're constantly fed bureaucracy that isn't in your job description. The government sends you lumps of molten plastic to hurt the kids in your care, and then tells you it's on you to deliver it and get rid of the rubbish, etc., etc. None of this is what you get trained for as a teacher. And then, imagine you're a nurse. You go to work trying to help people. You arrive at work, one person has to leave early, which not in any other workplace wouldn't be a disaster. Suddenly, you have to get someone in on a day off. You have to work 14 hours in a row. That's not uncommon. You have overtired people who didn't know they'd have to work looking after people who are on death's door in some cases. Mistakes are going to happen every single day. And every time a mistake happens, somebody dies or is, permanently injured in some way in some of these high critical care industries. Like these, I know it's a very kind of soft-lid thing to say, but the numbers of people, right? Like increasing money isn't just an accounting trick. It's also like how we create a society that's worth living in. So, like I do think it's worth looking at a budget as like a statement of principles, but also remembering like the values that undergird those are really like telling and heartbreaking. And it's hard not to look at this and go, oh, no, we were right about you.
Yeah, I use the opportunity to take it back around to the Greens budget, right? Like we're saying there's an 8% difference in the debt between the two, and commenting on the just the wild disproportionate language used to describe that 8% difference. But the two budgets are wildly different, right? Like because a large amount of the cost of National's budget is just going, it's just free money for their mates. And the Greens don't have that in theirs. And so it's money going to things that are good.
Well, the big, yeah, obviously the big difference is increased revenue from more taxes versus decreased revenue via tax cuts, right? If you give all your money to rich people, then of course you're screwed for what you can spend money on. But if you take a bunch of money off billionaires with private jets, you have that money to spend and do stuff with. Like, even the, if we can quickly just touch on the specific 20% capital tax spec thing, which is the main thing that Nationals trying to kind of hang their hat on to
This is
say
the
this.
trickle down bit, eh? It was
This is
so
the trickle
wild
down bit.
hearing Paddy Gower say that.
But like, I think it's worth breaking it down a little bit, right? So it's 20% tax back for new assets. Not residential property, which is good if you're going to do this. Like, look, I'm in favor of increasing internal consumption at this point, domestic consumption. Like, I think that's a smart thing to do as a, if you were going to do like Keynesian economics, that's what you should be doing. So on paper, that's not, this is the sort of thing you would hope that a Labour government would also be doing, but not through this mechanism, because the vast majority of the consumption that's going to happen and get tax back from this method, Treasury says 80% is stuff that would have happened anyway. So you're just losing tax on, it's just tax back that you would have otherwise gained. And if you think back to the 90s and the 2000s, everyone was buying. Was starting look-through companies, right? Why wouldn't you just have a company? Start a company and use it to do whatever you want to say. Like, everyone's got an anecdote of someone they know that started a company not to do anything but to write off tax. So it's just a transfer to consultants and accountants, right? Like, that's the only people who are really going to gain from this. And like, look, if you're a business and you were going to buy something anyway, this is the time to do it. But is it the time to spend money on something you wouldn't have otherwise spent money on, given that the base of consumers doesn't have more take-home money to actually pay for your stuff? No, it's not, because you've left the structure of the economy exactly the same, right? Like, your consumers don't have money to buy your goods. You're not going to increase your actual kind of incomings without, taking bites out of the tiny amount of market share that's out there, because everyone who's poor has just had their pay cut, and the KiwiSaver changes mean over the next few years there's going to be less take-home pay. So everyone who is consuming your stuff doesn't have the money to consume your stuff anymore. But also, if you do buy a new ute, that's what the government would always say, right? If you do buy a new ute, then you don't have to pay the tax on it. I.e., we as a society don't get the money from you buying that asset, right? Sorry, specific rant. Feel free to cut it if you hate it. It's just annoyed me. The way
No,
it's being
I
treated, I
think.
think, is like it's absolute bullshit. Like, they just there's a fundamental misunderstanding, even from within like a capitalist perspective, of the function of this type of tax cut. Like, you can see why you would want the headlines, "We're increasing domestic spending." And like, I think that is what you need to do in the face of like global trade uncertainties. But the way you do that is you increase consumption. You don't cut taxes blanket across corporations, because also, guess who's going to make the most use of this? It's not your like neighborhood landscaper who needs a new ladder. It's every company who's going to redefine the stuff they're buying from one category to another and write off an extra 20% of their depreciation.
Hey, sure, not going to have a whole bunch of plucky young entrepreneurs starting their own businesses, and this is going to help them with startup
Mum
costs.
and dad businesses.
Oh God! I mean, they're not going to learn it at tertiary education, because they've increased the cost of that by 6% again after last year. So don't learn anything, you know.
Mum and dad is my favorite term because it presupposes that nobody who's ever had offspring can be a bad person, which is to anybody who has had parents.
Is a really good
Don't
point.
know. It's very funny. This was a favorite John Key rhetorical term, and I want to talk about Key a little bit because what you've brought up about cuts in real terms, something that I think people need to be cognizant of, The Key government froze RNZ's funding and a lot of public broadcast money funding. And that meant that there was, as inflation increased, a cut in real terms to these things. Radio New Zealand has never recovered. Now ACT is coming out and saying, actually, we want to cut RNZ down. How was RNZ responding to this, you might ask? By saying, please, sir, I want some more, because that's all they know how to do is lick boot. But I think it's worth noting that for how flawed our state broadcaster is, it's still a state broadcaster. It's still to some extent inured from commercial pressures. And it is not a good thing that not only has its funding been cut in real terms in the classic sense that, early childhood education is being cut, but also there's a proposal to reduce it even further. This was something that was a common tactic of the Key government that I think people need to become more aware of, because we haven't recovered from these things. And every time there's a Labor government, it's just a holding pattern. The Clark government didn't restore what had been done to this country in the 90s. It just was a holding pattern. The Employment Relations Act was really a way of solidifying and cementing what the Employment Contracts Act did effectively. And there was a lot of union opposition to it at the time. I think people don't really remember this, just coming off the back of the WTO protests in Seattle. So it's worth understanding how these rhetorical tricks work, so that when you see this sort of thing reported in the news, to the extent that there isn't just outright lying from people, if it's being fudged, you can see this sort of thing, and you can understand, you can respond to it, and you can talk to people about it, because it is important that we do have some kind of mass communication for a country where you can't talk to every single person as if they're your neighbor, like we pretend this country is. Because that isn't the way that it works. There is a dissemination of information. There is a reason why ACT doesn't, and National don't want there to be some kind of soft check, no matter how soft it is. They want to be able to do it with impunity. They want pure ignorance.
Yeah, something maybe people don't realize is I think 1 of 200 is pro independent state broadcaster, just not pro whatever the fuck we've ended up with, in terms of the leadership at some of these organizations. I'm even pro like all the different media orgs in a lot of ways. Just do your fucking jobs.
They say the left isn't willing to compromise, but it's like you can be a communist and still say, like, it is better to have a state broadcaster than not. Do you know what I mean?
As we have said for 7, 8 years now,
The leftists are very, actually, despite the reputation, very pragmatic and practical and good at compromising,
I
because we
mean,
don't have power.
except
and
with
we,
each other.
yeah, we have an how insert your age here length practice doing so. You know, we've never been able to compromise. I just want to, in real time, fact check myself from before. I said Treasury thinks 80% of the capital spend by businesses would have already happened. That fact is wrong. The majority will be, but that 80% was Treasury's expectation of employers' contributions to the increase in KiwiSaver levels. So this is another fact yet, is that the compulsory KiwiSaver is going to go up from 3 to 4%. You can opt out, blah, 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 blah. But that Treasury thinks 80% of that increase will be offset by employers paying staff less over the next few years. So it's deliberately slowing income, which will slow government funding, right? So,
And it was slow consumption,
yeah,
like, which was
exactly. Doing the
ostensibly the
exact
purpose
opposite.
of the 20%
This is what I'm
check.
saying. That's why I got
Fired
that confused.
Pinocchios,
Sorry,
Philip.
listeners.
They're just making shit up. They're literally just making shit up. Like, none of this stuff even works in concert with itself. A lot of it, I mean, no, I mean, you step back and you go, okay, they're not doing what they're saying they're doing, right? They are literally, they're giving free money to private schools. Like, it's very, very clear exactly what they are doing.
They know that this is, that these numbers don't make sense. They know that people would not be amenable to it if they understood it. Because previously, where it had just been, oh, this is the neoliberal hegemony, and we will just openly, I mean, they're not transparent about a lot of things. I think neoliberalism, its inception, New Zealand was conspiratorial, as several posters who we know will oftentimes get into deep rabbit holes about. But to a large extent, there was an understanding that if you were a leading or part of a major institution in New Zealand, this would be some kind of national discourse and conversation, at least. Like, Treasury might do its machinations in private, but it comes out and says, like, these are our figures, this is what we anticipate. Instead, what we're seeing is unions being prevented from being able to participate in these discussions, which to me indicates that Treasury knows that this stuff is not only deeply wrong for like on an ethical level as an economic calculus, but that it doesn't make sense from a capitalist point of view, you know, from a social democratic point of view, which is something that you often point out, Philip, from not necessarily a Keynesian perspective or a Minskian perspective or anything, but that it just doesn't make sense because you can't be an infinite money bank as a government for just giving more and more tax breaks to businesses when those businesses aren't going to have anything on the black side of the ledger because nobody's spending money because nobody has any money. Advertising doesn't make sense. You can't be competitive in a marketplace and try to distort it through your advertising when what people are looking at is not what's my personal association with the story of this brand? It's what is the cheapest product? When I go into the supermarket, what is the cheapest one? That is all people are thinking about.
This is one of those really like horrible markers of where kind of where we're at right now. As you go into the supermarket and you go, let's say you go to get budget tomatoes, right? And it's like four cans max at this price. And you're like, okay, that's where we're at.
Guys, I'm just glad we're not living in Soviet society where you can only have a limited amount, a rationed amount of goods available.
Oh, can you believe that we, you know what they made us do? They made us in the pandemic, they made us eat the bugs and live in the pods. Thank God now I can go to the supermarket and there's Chex notes, a limit on toilet paper. What?
Affordable toilet paper. Go to Faro. I'm sure you can get infinite $20 toilet paper. But
Yeah.
yeah, I mean, it is both ideological, but also like,
So here's the trick. You need to do all of your shopping in Ponsonby, but just a five finger discount.
yeah. Well, let's keep an eye on those police leaks and see, over the next week if that keeps coming out about what they're going to actually police and what they're not. But we can
That is
maybe
a bit
follow
of
up
a
on that.
misnomer, I think, because
I think that's it.
the aura system that all of these retail stores use, this private mass surveillance that they've deployed against the entire country in the last 2 years that nobody is allowed to know about. In fact, actually, what they do is they wait for the amounts to accrue up into a more serious criminal level, and then they will charge you with a burglary instead of shoplifting, which is a 10-year max. Because if it's a trespass plus theft under 500 and you have a number of these charges, then they can charge it as that.
It's a bargain. It's kind of it's their version of like the ninth coffee's free, right? It's a pretty smart move. But I just wanted to say, like, this is going to make me sound like a liberal again, and no apologies, but
Hey, better than heading for David Seymour, I'm gonna
sorry,
say.
make you sound like a
All
liberal,
right,
Philip.
chill out. Everyone in the chat, shut up. Ian Rennie, who I, assume is no relation to
Because
Craig.
it's spelled differently for one thing.
It's the same last name, is Treasury Secretary, right? And has been involved in and advising prime ministers as far back as the early 90s. And it shows, right? Like he advised Bolger in 1990 to 93 era, mother of all budgets era. And like the attitudes of Treasury hasn't changed that much over that period of time. But the way the world works has changed a shitload over that long. Even on a macroeconomic scale, like bond markets don't function how they did in the early 90s. Your options when it comes to borrowing, spending, the way that money's paid back, comparisons around the world are all different, right? International bond markets and lenders are like clamoring to spend money in New Zealand and invest in New Zealand. And I think we should treat that extremely skeptically, but not for the reasons that he would say, right? And I think at some point, leftists especially need to start treating non-MP political actors a bit more seriously. Like people like him have done a lot more damage to our country than, I don't know, most front bench national MPs. Because over decades, their ideology has had a chance to seep through the public
The
service.
deep state.
Yeah. I mean that is what a deep state actually is, right? You don't vote these people out. It's the yes prime ministerification of politics is a real thing. And like when Labour's in power, if you don't get rid of these people, they stay around and you end up with, that's why National Light is such an easy thing
I
to
mean,
happen.
when Labour's in power, the
You
Green
don't.
co-leader puts in the budget responsibility rules. So I don't know how much the Treasury had to do with that.
It's well, probably, I, you know,
Probably a fair
it's
amount,
not nothing.
honestly.
I would guess not nothing.
I
You don't understand. If they don't do that, the media will criticize them.
Oh no. Yeah.
It's so fucked. At least, look, at least the Greens are not reviling from actually taking stances on stuff these days.
And increasing public spending, thank goodness. Good job,
Yeah.
Greens.
And being
Like
like, hey, you know what? Debt is actually good.
that should
Like,
never have been a question.
and coming on one of 200, I heard.
I hear that they're doing that more and more often.
More and more people saying it.
One of the really shocking things, just to, like, I guess, coming up to final notes, is I heard someone talking about like pre-war infrastructure in New Zealand starting to like feel the strain. Like, that's where we are with our infrastructure, right? Like, we need so much. And it's not just, we don't just need to chunk a whole bunch of government debt at this stuff. Obviously, we need funding for it. We don't have a construction industry here, right? Like, we are going to need outside help. And it just seems really simple to me that the government could just fund this and take a huge fucking loan out or whatever. But, well, no, not take a loan out. They could create money, because that's what governments do. They can just create money out of thin air. Yes, there is a magic money tree. And just start spending it on rebuilding stuff. They create jobs, they create consumption, they'd build things that aren't going to be washed away in the coming climate crisis. They'd get people off the streets, into new homes. They'd have
Earthquake.
hospitals that aren't giving people fucking super bugs.
Earthquake resilience, that's been costed at a few billion. And look how much recovering after earthquakes has cost over the last decade, right?
And I just do it. Just fucking do it. It feels like it's a solution to almost everything.
Well, that's an actual social democratic vision, right? Like if you cared about the future of New Zealand and you thought that this is how things worked, that's what you would be saying. Like this is, again, not to repeat ourselves for the millionth time, but this is a layup for Labour. You go, look, National has accounted for this. Why haven't they accounted for that? They haven't accounted for the entire key government's defunding and flatlining of funding for, insert everything, health, education, conservation, climate change, resilience, infrastructure, energy, all the things that needed to have their funding increased over those 20 years that were kept afloat by consumption patterns around the world and trade, essentially, right? And at some point, you need to pay these debts. Credit card companies have come, Nicola. Nicola Willis loves talking about, like, oh, you wouldn't put this on the credit card. It's like, well, we
Yeah,
did.
I would actually.
You worked for Bill English when you did that. And now, we have a more holistic understanding of what a country needs, and those debts are due because there's an invisible ledger that you didn't include on your balance sheet,
But
and that's
everyone
hundreds of billions of dollars.
actually knows it as well, and they all know it. And the thing is, as well, like it wouldn't even matter as much if a lot of us were personally worse off if we knew that if we had a health emergency, or even if we just need to go to the GP, it wasn't going to cost us $100, right? Like, for the appointment plus the prescription. Like, that's where you like that's a direct cost saving. Like, increasing health capacity is a direct health saving to every individual in the country. And likewise for almost every public service. And but you never get given that invisible ledger, as you say, Philip. You
Yeah,
never
health.
get shown like how this stuff would actually balance out for us, because it's not counted across their like fucking their OPEX and their CAPEX budget sheets. It's such a fucking business financial year corporatized version of trying to run a country, and it's fucking destroying us.
Yeah, health, like healthcare, education, transport, energy, infrastructure, basic infrastructure, like the way that your city and town is structured. Imagine if we spent enough to keep all of those things up to scratch. And then, the next step out from that is having a healthy environment around that so that you can live a healthy life without record numbers of people having lung issues and dying from air pollution, for example, or not being able to swim in their local river that their parents could because the house up the road has been dumping asbestos in it. This isn't like, it's not rocket surgery and it is extremely affordable. But I'm yet to see a vision that would address all those things, which to me is just like, social
Sad.
democratic. It's not complicated.
It's not rocket surgery, but it is brain science.
Brain
I
science.
mean, there's a reason why the discussion is about how, well, the publication of figures as well is What is GDP going to look like? What are corporate profits going to look like? There's a reason why people talk about why the nightly news has this is how the NZX is going, how the stock market is going. How many people are actually like what percentage of the population of this country are actually like involved in a meaningful way in the stock market? A very small percentage.
I used to have that number on the top of my head. It's less than 10, but more than 5, I think.
Yeah. And the thing about that is, and I think this point has been made by many people many times before, but it's worth saying again, is that the news isn't really for you in a sense. You are not seen as one of the people at the commanding heights of the economy. And in some ways, it's mass communication because the idea is to try to manufacture the idea in your head that these things are naturalized and normalized. But even stepping back from that, there's a reason why the budget will look at, what are projections for GDP? What do business profits look like out of this? But they don't look at what is the human health cost of this? What does it mean if we are a much better country as a tax haven for startups whose real purpose, and this is what AI is doing, is to pollute waterways, is to steal energy and just fritter it away, is to cause toxic waste in areas where these data centers pop up, right? This isn't yet happening in New Zealand. You can easily see us being a vassal state as an outpost in the Pacific doing this. And there is a reason why we don't look at what is our investment in roads, for example. Are we giving so many billions of more dollars in roads? Okay, so we don't have enough density. We don't have public transport. We don't have trains up and down the country. We have cars. What is that doing meaningfully? It's releasing pollutants into the air. There are microplastics from the tires. This is something where asthma in New Zealand is really bad in cities for children, where eczema gets worse. We are a country of irritants and pollutants, and we punch well above our weight in terms of our destruction of human health and our ecology. We have a comparable amount of national forest to Germany, I believe, which is a country with like how many, 80 million people or something? Just truly shocking stuff. And in terms of New Zealand's forestry, a lot of it is just as we've said before, these invasive kind of monocrops. It is just, we're growing a million pine trees and then we're going to cut them down again. There's nothing. This whole country has been scoured to make artificial grassland for cows and imported animal. There are real issues and real reasons why this is not the way that a budget is talked about. We don't talk about human costs. We don't talk about health cost, and these are real issues. And I think even when people rightly point out the specific technical aspects of how this government is funneling away money from the public health service toward the private health service in order to undermine our national health care and ultimately to get rid of our national health service. You can also step back from that and say, in a broader sense, human well-being in this country, what is going on with how we have ordered it? And all of that runs back not only to all of these numbers, but to two, I think, vital questions. One is, what is the economy? And the other is, who is the economy for? And the answers to both of those questions, as it stands, from everybody, from every party in this country that is in parliament, to the media class, to the people who own and manage the society and the economy, is frightening to the rest of us.
Yeah, that's pretty horrible. And it's indicated there's evidence for this in the budget as well, directly, in that, and this is from Thomas Coughlin, in the Public Finance Amendment Bill that was alongside the budget on the 22nd, they were actively repealing parts of the previous bill that had the word well-being. So there are at least 10 instances of that. That it is with intent. It is with intent. And I want to just finally come back around to this increase in carceral spending, right? Because I think there's also an understanding from the right wing and from Labour as well. Who are the people who they're the government that announced and began the mega prison consultation and construction out at Waikerea, right? They know the direction this is going. They know they're going to have to imprison more people. Because when you increase pressure on people to this extent, things start to occur. And we've seen over the last maybe decade, there has been an increase in the left about talking about, the things that cause crime. Like, yeah, look, if everyone's poor and struggling, there is going to be more crime. That is going to increase in ways that no one has ever seen before. You're going to be getting a whole bunch of people who are incredibly desperate and feeling like they have no way out, who are going to start taking action on this stuff. And some people might do that by joining organizations, doing stuff with the unions, taking political protest actions, and some people are going to get a little bit more extreme than that. And we're starting to see that happen across the Western world. And I think political leadership understands that that's going to happen, and that's part of the reason why we see this increase in enforcement agencies, less measures to stop them from abusing people, more abusive process, less rights applied to people. But it's going to boil over. And one of the things that always happens when the left says this is people on the right accuse them of calling for extremism, right? But something's going to give at some point. And you either have policy settings that don't get us there, or you have policy settings that do. And I think this budget in particular, as you were saying, Philip, alongside that slow march over successive budgets and the current conditions that we're in at this moment, are going to mean that we see some political extremism a lot sooner rather than later.
Yeah, look, I mean, society pays for allowing more people to slip into precariousness, right? Like, and whether that's in welfare payments that allow them to have a step up, or if it's in correction payments that keep them at the bottom, you're still paying for it, right? There is, as we were talking about, a kind of holistic aspect to a budget as an encapsulation of where society's at. And if the way you want to react to people having a bad time is by putting them in a cage and allowing addiction issues, mental health issues, family issues, systemic issues to all get worse, what are you going to kill them? Are you going to let them out? Because it's going to get worse, and you're going to pay for it in some way, right? So, you're just kidding yourself by having this kind of short-term CEO mindset that the next quarter we've delivered 0.8%, blah blah blah. Oh, how exciting! After that, oh, I sure hope we don't have to think about that yet, right? The shareholders will be happy. So I think this kind of gets back to stuff we've talked about before about the way that this iteration of the National Party doesn't understand the kind of trajectory of politics in this country, even from their own standpoint. Like, as you said, John Key wouldn't have had this budget. This is a win for the ACT Party. And if I were an ACT Party voter, I would be fucking crowing. I'd be going, look at this is the David Seymour budget. Congratulations.
Yeah, if you were a member of ACT, you'd be handing it to David Seymour.
Yeah, it's the only situation in which I would ever do so.
Hey, let's wrap it up.
Yeah, I don't think there's that much more on the. I mean, there is a huge amount more to talk about with the budget, but this is something that will come out as it goes, and we're already past time, so.
Yeah. Well, thank you for joining us, everybody. Thank you to my co-hosts. Thank you, Simone.
Yay.
Thank you, Philip.
Thank you, everyone. If you're a large multinational tech company that's recently saved $500 million in projected tax costs over the last few years that a government may or may not have just handed you on a platter, invest in my new clean AI business for New Zealand. You know it's clean because it's from New Zealand, and you know people will buy it because it says AI in the label. We haven't decided what we're going to do yet, but when we've finished sponsoring this podcast, we'll maybe move on to bigger projects to give you a good return on investment. Thank you.
Should we just do a dot-com bubble thing where we name the company like something AI and then just like seek capital funding for
I mean, this is we're having a discussion off air, giving away too many of our strategies. Thanks so much to our audience for having a listen in. Share, like, subscribe for more, what do you call it, discursive of
goodness.
budget and policy discussion. We'll be back multiple times next week, I think. We've got another couple of midweek podcasts coming up, and we'll see you then.
If our faces are denied, live in a pointless life, but learning all your lessons from your politics is no distinction. The road to Parnell is paved with good intentions. And I'll admit that I'm at a loss for what to say when they criticize a cost me ought to stay. Cause I live amongst the people every day. This vindictive, forgetful fucking race.